part one of our interview with cognitive anthropologist and founder of BrainCells.com, Dr. Bob Deutsch.
Now back to our host, Kevin Kelly,
on the Buzz Bubble.
Hey, welcome back to the Buzz Bubble. Kevin Kelly here in Brooklyn at the infamous Brooklyn Bowl. We're here this week to talk to Dr. Bob Deutsch, what I think is one of the world's greatest cognitive anthropologists in advertising. He gets into the head, much like we get into the head of our guests, he gets into the head of the consumer, a word that he doesn't like, but he'll tell you why. So we're going to talk to Bob. Bob has a company called Brain Cells. You can see him at brain-cells.com. Bob's going to tell us about how to create that real emotional connection with brand and consumer. And let's go find out why he's so upset about when we call our consumers consumers. So let's head inside of the Brooklyn Bowl and get into the head of Dr. Bob Deutsch right now. Come on in. So we're here with Dr. Bob Deutsch. Dr. Bob, thank you for climbing into the Buzz Bubble. So great to see you.
And, my pleasure.
I think we were originally connected by Alex Bogusky. You had done work with Crispin, and then he either connected us or you reached out. And it's been a great association. They referred to you as a cog over there. They have the cogs, cognitive anthropologists. You know, everybody likes to shorten it up. So maybe tell me about that relationship and what went on, how you worked with them.
Sure. So they came to me asking if I would compose and lead a sort of behavioral science advisory board.
Okay.
That I would put together, or suggest to them people that they would bring together. And it was, the idea was rapid fire response. You know, like you get an email from Alex.
Right.
Tell me something about X.
Right, right.
And, you know, send me a page or two within the next 4 hours or
wow.
12 hours
rapid
or whatever.
Fire.
And sometimes, you know, they used it and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they came back and said, yes, but sometimes they came back and said, great, tell me more.
Right, right, right.
So it was a really iterative thing and it was actually fun. And the people we brought into it were just great. It was, you know, my job was easy just to sift through their words and sort
yeah,
of coalesce them.
It's a great relationship. We have a similar kind of relationship, you know, and it's that insight that you need to create that big idea and really get into the head of the consumer, although you don't like the word consumer. We can talk about that a little bit as we
yes.
go along.
Yes.
How about a lot of people think of what you do and getting that human insight and it's correlated to what planners do. Is there a relationship there? Is there a replacement there? Or is there a working together with how planners work?
Well, I think the original idea about planning was be the voice of the consumer. That
right,
was
right.
that was the phrase. In one sense, that's great and required.
Yeah, yeah.
My mantra sort of is over the last 20 years I'm doing this now. In June, it'll be 20 years.
Wow.
People, not consumers.
Right.
You know, consumers is too small of a box to put people in. It assumes too much neatness.
What precipitated that? You know, it's not consumers, it's people. Because we are, as our brand's relationship is with these people, we care that they're consuming our brand. So I guess that's why we've always put it in that box.
Yeah. Well, I think to me it's in a sense simple. Products have to fit into people's lives. People's lives don't have to fit into products, so you better damn well know something about people's lives.
That's fair.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you really, I mean, here's the anthropology and the cognitive anthropology of it. If you look at people as people, living real lives, real time, on the ground, so to speak.
Right, right.
And try to get a sense of them in the expanse of that context, then you see them as alive, as human, which means there are sort of people, all people, are sort of a rat's nest of all kinds of contradictions, ironies, brilliances, hesitancies, and you have to know about all of it.
Right, right.
And how people, in a sense, create their own brand of meaning. Because that's the only thing you could use to strategize from.
Okay, go into that a little bit, their own brand of meaning.
Humans weren't put in this world in a way that meaning is given to them via instinct, like a lot of animals, so to speak.
Okay.
Right? They have to make meaning. In a sense, people say to me, well, Bob, you understand the brain. What does the brain do? Well, my work is not so much on the brain in terms of neurons, but it's on the mind, okay? How the mind makes meaning. And the mind, in a sense, is a machine that is incessantly at work trying to answer the question, what's up?
Okay.
Or what's up next?
Yeah.
It has to predict. So it finds patterns. The mind is a pattern maker.
Okay.
From patterns, it makes symbols. It makes stories to make sense of things. From stories, it makes metaphor to lift it out of the here and now and to extrapolate into future.
Right, right.
And from all that, it makes predictions and it makes meaning. And meaning is a design that people create. Everyone's an artist in that sense. It's not just A leads to B leads to C.
Right.
The mind is not a logic maker. It's an emotional logic maker, which makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And what about the, you know, I know you've studied, and I don't know if it comes into play, the multiple levels of the brain, that disconnection between the decision-making brain and the communicating brain, and where does that come into play?
Well, in terms of how people experience themselves, there's a unity between all that. It's, you know, there's, in a sense, cognitive dissonance
right. Is
a misnomer.
Okay.
You know? People sort of coalesce, put through sort of a Cuisinart process, information and facts they have at their disposal that they think is correct.
Right.
They have beliefs, prior beliefs.
Sure.
They have feelings. They have emotion. They have stories about how the world works and assumptions and presuppositions. And they put that all into the Cuisinart, turn on the button and go zzzz.
Right.
And meaning, interpretation, a story comes out. And you have to know something if you want to effectively communicate with that group of people. You have to know something about how those stories and metaphors get created.
And how much do you think is, you know, in a brand relationship with a person and a brand, is that it feels right and is features and benefits? Yeah, this is going to, it's the right thing for me because it's the right price and it has the benefits I want. As opposed to, boy, this just feels good. This feels right.
Yeah. Well, I think that people, we talk too much about people making decisions.
It's okay.
Because decisions imply too much rationality, too much analytics, too much logic. I think people behave more in terms of what I call a spasm of sentiment.
Okay, tell us about that.
Which really doesn't need a lot of logic. It needs, I think there are three things required.
Okay.
For people to sort of buy into you. And people have to buy into you as an idea before they buy you as a product.
Right, right.
Right.
People forget that, they do.
Yeah. And I think what's required is people have a sense first that there's something about you that's familiar. You can't be totally alien.
Right, right.
The brain doesn't like that, you know? I give talks sometime on innovation and creativity. And I usually write on the whiteboard at the beginning, innovation and tradition. And ask the audience, what's the most important word up there? And, you know, whether it's 20 people or 2,000 people, they all yell, innovation.
Right. Okay?
And in a sense, they're right. But I say, wrong. That's not the most important word up there. The most important word up there is and.
Okay.
Innovation and tradition. Because innovation has to have some way to get a foothold into what already exists.
Right. Right, that familiarity.
Yeah.
That.
So the first step is people have to perceive something about you, not necessarily literally, they could do it symbolically, as, well, oh, this is good. I don't have to start all over again. There's something about this that's familiar to me.
Right, right.
Right? So I call that familiarity. It's there's something about it that's like me. Okay. Next step is people have to have a sense of you like them. Okay. Not that they like you. They have to have a sense that you like them means they feel something about you, understand them.
There's an inclusive kind
right.
of...
Right, right. Okay. They could participate with you. They trust you. And you're in it sort of together. And I think that's especially true nowadays in the digital world.
Right.
You know, we've gone from passive viewer, let's say, to content creator and participant.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone from product-to-person communication to person-to-person communication
right.
through
right.
social media.
Sure.
We've gone from information gathering to what we could call experience gathering.
Right.
And we've gone from product as brand to me as brand. People like to think about themselves as brands now.
Right, right.
So for all that, you need some sense of participation.
Okay.
You know, and communication, inclusion. Transaction.
And I want to come back to that after you get through, because that's important. We talk about that when you talk about social tribes, and we'll come back to that.
Right.
But
right.
Okay.
And so those two things, one is an affirming the other, one is confirming the other, you could say it that way. And professional communicators are not bad about doing that. It's easy in a sense, because that doesn't take any courage, really, you know?
Right, right.
But to build an emotional connection that's lasting, something other has to happen.
Right.
And the third part of the alchemy of what I call attachment is people have to experience that regardless of you, something about you is familiar. They understand you, you understand them, they have that sense. They have to also feel that you and them are different, but through the difference, you, the product, you, the person, you, the idea, can be a venue for their own self-expansion. So in other words, you have to challenge the audience to sort of recalibrate their familiar. Now that takes courage.
Yeah, right, right.
But that's really what builds brand. You know, in a sense, I don't think brand is what it's usually defined as, which is name recognition plus positive attributes associated with
right,
name recognition.
Right.
That's not how the mind works. The mind works this way.
That's it for part one of our interview with Dr. Bob Deutsch. Tune in next week for part two.
If it's going to build a relationship with you, an emotional attachment, it has to take, if you will, its own story about itself,
mm-hmm.
its story of you, and metaphorically merge them into one story. Then you have what you could call a spasm of emotion. It takes no logic, it takes no attributes, it takes no analytic process whatsoever. It's bang.
Feels right. Let's
yeah.
do it.
You're with me.
Next week on The Buzz Bubble.